Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is so good to see all of you here today, and a welcome to people who are online or watching the recorded service. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my great pleasure to serve this very generous and caring congregation. As you all know, we have a new administrator here, Jen. And I asked her, with your newcomer eyes, how do you see our congregation? Because once you've been here a long time, you know, you don't see it as clearly. And she said, you know what? You guys are so loving and caring for each other. It's just remarkable to watch. And that just gave me chills and great joy for all of us that we can offer that to one another. And I just want to say welcome to spring. Tomorrow's the first day of spring, and the last couple of days we had some great spring weather. I hope everybody got to enjoy it. So welcome to spring. And I just want to let you know that each and every one of you is welcome here. That is the basic tenet of our faith as Unitarian Universalists, that all have worth and dignity, no matter who you are, no matter how you feel today, if you feel joyful, or if there's pain on your heart, each and every one of you is welcome because you are a beloved child of the universe. So I just want to say a couple of announcements. One is, if you're new here, we really ask you to fill out a visitor form. You can find out more ways to engage with our community. The best ways to engage with our community are to come to these services. And also, Annie's holding up a little thing. They're in the little pocket in the seat in front of you. Is to join small groups. That's how you really get to engage with people and engage about the questions of our faith and how you live it in the world.
So beautiful. I'm so glad we sang that song this morning. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him, and I'll be your lay leader this morning. Our opening reading is by Patricia Shilden. Here is where we gather in the presence of the sacred. Here is where we gather to experience the holy. Here is where, together, we face the unanswerable questions and acknowledge that not knowing is as sublime as it is frustrating. Here is where we unite in the midst of life and all the glories and suffering it can hold, knowing both are ever present. Here is where we ask, think, risk, discuss, ponder, and offer what might not be welcomed or even acceptable someplace else. Here is where, if we allow it, we are deeply moved. Here is where we encounter each other in deep and powerful ways that surprise us, yet without which we would not survive. Here we gather to worship, to experience something happen, perhaps something different for each of us according to our beliefs. Something unnamed, uncategorized, and unusual, yet absolutely necessary. Here we are, so gathered, our minds, our hearts, and our souls. And so our worship begins.
Our story this morning is called Be Kind by Pat Miller. Tanisha spilled grape juice yesterday, all over her new dress. Everyone laughed. I almost did too, but Mom always tells me to be kind, so I tried. I don't think it worked. I said, purple is my favorite color. I thought Tanisha would smile, but she ran into the hall instead. When she came back, snack time was over. She put on her art smock and didn't look at anyone. I almost told Tanisha that art was my favorite class, but I didn't want her to leave again, so I painted purple splotches and added some green until I had a bunch of beautiful violets. While I painted, I thought about Tanisha. Should I have handed her my napkin? Let her borrow my sweatshirt? Spilled my juice so everyone stared at me instead? What does it mean to be kind anyway? Maybe it's giving, making cookies for Mr. Rinaldi, who lives alone. Letting someone with smaller feet have my too tight shoes. He might win races in them, too. Maybe it's helping, putting dirty dishes in the sink. Cleaning up after Otis, our class guinea pig. He's a messy eater. Maybe it's paying attention. Telling Desmond I like his blue boots. Asking the new girl to be my partner. Listening to Aunt Franny's stories, even the ones I've heard before. Being kind should be easy, like throwing away a wrapper or recycling a bottle or saying, thank you, bless you. My mom says the quickest way to be kind is to use people's names. Hey, Carla, what's new, Omar? Good afternoon, Rabbi Mandelbaum. Being kind can be hard, too. Even when you know what to do, teaching someone something I'm good at is tricky, even when I'm patient. And sticking up for someone when other kids aren't kind is really hard and really scary. Maybe I can't solve Tanisha's grape juice problem. Maybe all I can do is sit by her in art class and paint this picture for her because I know she likes purple too. Maybe I can only do small things, and my small things might join other small things other people do. And together they could grow into something big. Something really big, so big that our kindness spills out of our schools, spread throughout town, travel across country, and go all the way around the world. Right back to Tanisha and me. So we can be kind again and again and again. Let us sing our children to their classes.
In our hearts as we go.
For all that is our lives, we sing our thanks and praise. For all life is a gift for which we are called to use, to build the common good and make our own days glad. The first stanza of a favorite UU hymn, For All That Is Our Life, that we love to sing here at WUF. We do have so much to be grateful for. And I invite you right now to take a moment just to pause and reflect on where you feel gratitude in your own life. Perhaps it's the recent warm weather, the clothes that you are wearing, the songs that we sing that bring us joy, the breaths that we are taking together now. You are welcome to speak aloud what you are grateful for today, or type them in the chat. Send a text or whisper them in your heart. For in gratitude, we find gladness in our living. Gratitude and generosity coexist within us. We cannot nurture one without building up the other. Each quality shapes our mindset and posture towards whom we are being in the world. What are your values? What and how do you demonstrate your values? Sharing your gratitude, whether through financial contributions, your time, your energy, talents, and other resources, are a tangible commitment to the mission and values of this congregation. Each time we give, we renew this commitment to each other, to ourselves, and to the wider world with which we are a part. Today is Donate the Basket Sunday. And our recipient for January, February, and this month is Proud Ground. And let me share a little bit about them with you. We are all familiar with the stability, roots building, and potential for wealth building that home ownership can bring. But for so many, especially those who've been denied generational wealth and privilege due to systematic oppression, and especially in today's runaway housing market, the dream of home ownership can seem out of reach. Proud Ground works in the Portland metro area to help families afford their first home and works within a land trust model to ensure families can continue to live in their communities and keep housing affordable for years to come. Donations along with government funding allow the organization to acquire homes at below market value as well as provide the down payment for qualified families. In 2020, Proud Ground sponsored 58 new homeowners and has a goal of 200 new homeowners over the next 5 years. We are a proud partner with Proud Ground in their valuable work. The hosts may now come forward to receive the offering. Thank you so much for your generosity. Please join me in our affirmation of gratitude. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
There is so much happiness in this world. Goodness, love, and beauty grow within us and all around us. Together, we create a circle of celebration deep enough to hold all the joy in our lives. There is also much pain in the world. Each of us knows loss and suffering. Together, we create a circle of compassion wide enough to hold all the sorrow in our lives.
Okay, we're going to do this meditation on breathing, and there are three parts that you can try, and the choir is going to help you lead them. We're going to start with the third line, which is just the breathe in, breathe out drone. Then we'll welcome in the melody, and then we're going to do the repeats, and then the descant will happen, so you can either follow this in your hymnal or just do it organically as you hear the parts, and there's no strict rules about it. So have fun. Yeah. Meditation on breathing. Okay, we're going to start with the drone.
Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out.
Again.
Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in.
All right, here comes the melody.
I'll breathe out love and breathe in. I'll breathe in peace when I breathe in. I'll breathe out.
Now the descant.
When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love. When I breathe in, in peace. When I breathe out, I'll
back to the melody.
When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out.
Now just the drone.
Now we enter our time for meditation, reflection, and prayer. And in honor of today's theme, I offer this prayer from Sili Kachevich. Spirit of life and death, thou who art present to us in our suffering, as in our well-being, abide with us in this permeable time between dusk and dark. Soothe the secret pains we carry. Bless us with the courage to move toward our grief and not away. When all is hidden, when we find ourselves moving among the shadows, when we do not know the way, quiet our hearts, still our restlessness. Help us to embrace the unknown, to hold the mystery, and to let ourselves be held by it. For thou art the great hiddenness, and yet we know our breath is not so close to us as thy presence. Abide with us, O Spirit of compassion, as the power of healing, the assurance of peace, the love that will not let us go. Let us take a moment in meditation or prayer or reflection, as is your tradition.
Close in to me as the time.
whose tears of mercy come running down. Say no words, it is too soon. Say no words out loud, but wrap your quiet arms around. Hide us in your cloud.
To take a deep breath. Let all that beauty sink in. These are our words from our sources. The first reading is from the Old Testament book of Romans, chapter 5, verses 3 through 5. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out into the hearts through the Holy Spirit who's been given to us. The second reading is from Richard Rohr, Franciscan friar from the Roman Catholic tradition. All great spirituality is about what we do with our pain. By trying to handle our suffering through willpower, denial, medication, or even therapy, we have forgotten something that should be obvious. We do not handle suffering. Suffering handles us. In deep and mysterious ways that ironically become the very matrix of life. Suffering and sometimes awe has the most power to lead us into genuinely new experiences.
Today we are continuing our exploration of suffering. Richard Rohr says, "All great spirituality is about what we do with our pain. Why humans suffer and how one copes with suffering are two of the great philosophical and theological questions. Every person through their lives has to figure out how to manage all kinds of suffering. It's just the truth about being a human being. People have struggled to make meaning of suffering as far back in history as we know, and certainly much longer than that. All religions and all cultures offer stories about why we suffer and how best to manage that suffering. Unitarian Universalism, though, isn't as clear about how we make sense of suffering. We offer the solace of community and care during suffering, offering the message that when we suffer, others will be present to us. And when others suffer, we can be present to them. And we act this out each week as we put stones in the water to hold our suffering in our community of care. And this is grace and wonderful and important and good. But it's not the whole story of suffering. It's not sometimes enough. You use tend to lead toward the modern American secular story about suffering, which is we should not have it. Suffering is often treated like getting the happily ever after fairy tale wrong. It can be embarrassing, something we should manage with the goal of getting it to go away as quickly as possible and not sharing too much with others. We frequently sprinkle judgment on ourselves or others, wondering what the sufferer did to cause it. Because if you do it all right, you know it's supposed to be happily ever after. And more than once, I've heard someone processing another person's diagnosis and saying to me with real shock, "But they were so healthy," expressing an underlying belief that if you exercise and eat right, you can save yourself from suffering bad health. If we do the right things, our story of suffering goes, we won't have to suffer, as if we have control over everything. In our exploration of suffering, we have examined the book of Job in the Bible. This is one of the most ancient texts on suffering. The message is that suffering is inevitable. We do not get to understand it. The best strategy is to be humble before it and have faith in God, who is represented in this biblical text as the extremely powerful, mysterious, natural world. We've also explored Buddhism. Buddhism grew from Buddha's direct questions about why we suffer. Their teaching is that pain is inevitable. But suffering is caused by our desire for things to be different than they are, grasping for something else or pushing away an experience we do not want. It is that nagging mind ranting and wishing for anything to be different than what it is, or clinging desperately to what makes us glad. Suffering ends, they teach, if we accept what is and discover a more centered state of being. And this is pretty much the opposite of the American secular culture, where we often go into an all-out battle to reach happiness as quickly as we can. So today we're going to explore how Christianity deals with the question of suffering. And since Christianity is the dominant faith in our culture, most of us have experiences and opinions about it. Perhaps we are Christian. And it is a sustaining faith. Or we are not, but we have had good experiences with the faith. Or perhaps we were once Christian and were hurt by it. Or we grew away from it. And of course, the news is always full of the perspectives of the conservative right wing of Christianity, who are working hard, and it appears success in some places, to make their vision of the correct way to live the reality for every person. Their view of the correct way to live is not Unitarian Universalist, and often is just the opposite of what we believe. When this small group of Christians is so vocal, it is easy to get angry and lump all of Christianity in with their far-right political version of it. But those Christians do not represent all Christians, even if they do get a lot of airtime. I have heard people just blanketly say, Christians don't support a woman's right to choose, or are anti-gay, or anti-trans. And this is simply not true. Some Christians are that way, absolutely, certainly. But there are 200 Christian denominations in the U.S. and 45,000 across the world, and they have a variety of beliefs on those issues. Those social issues are not biblical, and they are not traditional to the faith. They're fairly new. And they stem more from a conservative worldview than a particularly Christian worldview. I start with this preamble because sometimes you have opinions about Christianity that makes it hard to hear and learn from the faith, even though it is one of our sources, and we are direct descendants from Christianity, from Christian traditions. However, Christianity is one of the great sustaining faiths of the last 2,000 years. And like all great faiths, Christianity offers spiritual and religious truths that help people live more meaningful, manageable, loving lives. This is true, even though the faith has absolutely been used by power and empire to abuse and control people, and even though there are extremists who tout a very dangerous version. Extremism is unfortunately a feature of all religious faith. It seems to be one place humans go. So, I chose to talk about Christian views of suffering during our month on vulnerability because of the central symbol of Jesus on the cross. Can there be anything more vulnerable than Jesus in his last days? Jesus was a prophet. He shared his truth of radical love and hospitality, and people responded until he had a great following. His success threatened two powerful groups, the Romans and traditional Jewish leaders. Their power did not stop him from teaching. In his last weeks of life, he went to Jerusalem, where the powerful lived, to celebrate Passover, even though he was fully aware of the danger to his life. And we all know the courage it takes to speak our truth, to be seen for what truly matters to us, and how especially difficult speaking our truth is when it might cause conflict or ridicule or dismissal, or even just an uncomfortable social moment. Courage is always a vulnerable act, and Jesus was courageous. He was vulnerable. Next, one of Jesus' closest friends betrayed him. Being betrayed causes most of us to feel wretched and so vulnerable. We opened ourselves to someone, counted on them, trusted them, and they turned on us, using our tenderness to harm us. It is the worst. Jesus experienced the vulnerability of betrayal. Then Jesus was beaten and humiliated and nailed to a cross to die slowly and painfully before crowds of people. To experience such pain publicly has to be one of the most vulnerable ways to die. Who wants to be seen like that? Who even wants to be seen when we have been huddled on the couch for a week with COVID or the flu? Still, somehow, through it all, he stayed clear to his ultimate commitments. Then on the cross, at the end, he expressed his feelings of being abandoned by the Holy Father God that he had devoted his life to. Being abandoned by what we trust the most, that is being vulnerable and naked before life. The end of Jesus' life is a story about extreme pain and suffering, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically, and the vulnerability of having that seen, both by those who loved him and those who hated him. For Christians, Jesus is part of God. They believe that God chose to take on the human flesh to truly experience what it means to be human, and particularly what it means to suffer. John 11:35 reads, "Jesus wept." It is the shortest Bible verse and happens after Lazarus, a friend of Jesus, has died. This means when a Christian suffers, when they ask for comfort from God, they ask for comfort from a God who truly gets how hard these life moments are, who truly understands. For those who do not have faith in such a God, it may be difficult to imagine, for those who have this faith, the sense of God's presence holding them as they sob and cry and rant and just feel overwhelmed and raw. But it is real. That presence is loving and comforting and healing. It helps, as Christians across the world will testify. We all need loving, comforting, and healing presence when our lives fall apart. Perhaps we do not believe in a loving God or have other conceptions, or perhaps we do believe in a loving God or have other conceptions of the divine flowing in and around us that we can lean into in times of suffering. If we do not have the faith, the world does offer healing presence in many ways. If we are very fortunate, we have friends and family who know just to be present with us in pain. The narrator in this morning's story offers kindness to her friend in a moment of pain. Kindness is always a balm when someone is suffering. This is something that I, as your minister, am able to offer you, and you should know that if you don't. I can just come be with you if your life falls apart and you are suffering. You don't have to be social or ask me how I am or change into nicer clothes or have a shower or serve me tea. I can just be present. So there's a container that holds you when you are breaking apart. Others in our community also know how to offer that type of presence in difficult times. This does mean, however, that you have to ask for help and support when you need it, and that can feel very vulnerable and thus really hard to do sometimes. But usually it's worth it to have that kind of care and kindness from people in your community. The natural world of trees and flowers and streams and oceans and moving air can also offer this presence. I really find it in the ocean myself. If you are able to just be in the natural world and listen and be still and allow your pain to flow out and into the expanse of the world can hold it. That we can be held in presence and care when we suffer is an important teaching Christianity offers us when managing suffering, and it's something certainly that our faith has brought from its Christian roots. The other major Christian teaching about suffering is that suffering can be redemptive, which basically means suffering has something valuable to teach us. Suffering can teach us to be compassionate to others who will have similar suffering in the future. If we survive breast cancer, our experience can help others who get breast cancer. If we have been through a divorce, we can help others who are getting a divorce. This perspective is helpful when actually going through the difficult experience. We can remember that we are in the process of learning things that will eventually help other people. Suffering can also be a way to build positive character attributes. In the Christian tradition, we heard that this morning in the reading from Romans. We also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, character, and character hope. One of the goals of the Christian faith is to create people who are like Jesus. Suffering helps mold people to be like him. I know from my own suffering has sometimes wrenched transformation out of me. I've had to let go of control. I've had to accept what seemed absolutely unacceptable. I've had to learn to love myself, even though, gasp, and as you've witnessed this morning, I am not perfect. Suffering can be seen as a test of faith. It can be a test to see, in Christianity, suffering can be seen as a test of faith. It can be a test to see if one will stay committed to one's faith and whether it will reveal one's inner character. It's like that question we may ask ourselves from time to time, how would we respond if the Holocaust happened in our lifetime? How do we respond to evil or a life-changing disability? Who are we truly when we get pushed in the anvil of life? Will we live our values? Will we be who we most want to be? Or will we be fearful and angry and despairing? Sometimes our lives move in such a ways that we find ourselves wrestling mightily with our desire to live with love and kindness and care towards others and our very real fear and despair. The story of Ross Douthat and his struggle with chronic Lyme disease is an example of suffering as a Christian. Ross Douthat is a columnist for the New York Times and a conservative Catholic. He shared his experience in his book, The Deepest Places. A New York Times review of the book begins this way. The early chapters of The Deep Places unfold like the first act of a horror movie. Feeling the pull of home and burned out by life on Capitol Hill, Ross Douthat and his wife buy a 1790s farmhouse on 3 acres of Connecticut pasture. He's feeling optimistic, perhaps a little self-satisfied. On the afternoon of their final home inspection, he wanders into the meadow out back, watches the deer frolic, and reflects that the purchase felt like a confirmation that we were on the right path, that I had planned and worked and won the things that I wanted and I deserved them. But the scene is tinged with dread. Something is lurking in those woods. Back in D.C., Douthat has a swollen lymph node, a stiff neck, and a strange vibrations in his head and mouth. Thus begins his many-year struggles with Lyme disease. His whole body is affected, and with his weeks, his body starts to shut down. The descriptions of his illness sound straight out of Job. Chronic pains, feelings of weird vibrations throughout his body, diarrhea, insomnia, rashes, and profound fatigue. Unfortunately, as known by any of us, including me, who has suffered from chronic illnesses, modern medicine did not help him. Over and over, he is told that these are reactions to stress. While he did test positively for Lyme's disease, the chronic version of the illness is not embraced by the medical community. After seeing many traditional doctors and specialists, he turns first to alternative medicine. And finally, this Harvard-trained New York Times columnist started trying bizarre solutions suggested in chat rooms in the depths of the internet. By the end of the book, he is better, but he is not well. The book grapples with his suffering and with his faith. Before Lyme, according to reviewer Stephen Whitmer, Douthat thought of himself as the guy who did things. He felt that my ambition and God's purposes could stroll along together nicely, that bad things might happen to some other good meritocrats, but certainly not to me. He believed that mostly the modern world had dealt with suffering, particularly physical suffering. We were sort of done with that. And during his experience, he discovered that being a privileged, successful person does not stop bad things from happening to you, and that severe physical suffering is alive and well in the modern world. Because modern suffering is often hidden through the happy lives on social media and television, or people around you just smiling through it and keeping it to themselves due to its slight embarrassing quality. He writes, "The experience of suffering felt more outrageous, more unjust than it did in a world where pain was ubiquitous to be concealed or filtered out by everyday experience." And I think there's something to ideas, since entering a permanent seeming sickness did seem like an impossible outrage to my modern self at first, like some sort of ridiculous bureaucratic mistake. But I learned from my illness is that chronic suffering can make a belief in a providential God, if you have such a thing going in, feel essential to your survival. He writes, "A crutch for weak-minded people. That's how the noted philosopher Jesse the Body Ventura once described religion. My pre-illness self would have disputed that condition, but my sickened self would merely give it a tweak. Absolutely, religion is a crutch, and it's not only useful for the weak of mind, but for everyone dealing with severe weakness. You had better believe that I leaned on my belief in a silent, invisible God more in those miserable months, that miserable summer, than on any hope or notion or idea in any prior portion of my life." Whether his kind of devout theism is ours or not, the idea that when we are hurting, that counting on what sustains and supports us and comforts us is more critical than ever. It's one of the things that we have. When Duhat shares his story of pain with a Benedict monk in the airport, the monk reminds him of a common Christian response to suffering. It is a gift for purgation, refinement, and redirection. Basically, a moment to relook at your life. He takes this seriously. He opens his eyes to suffering he had no idea existed. Not only those suffering from chronic pain and chronic Lyme, who he's in close contact with, but all kinds of pain he never acknowledged, including the inevitable pain of aging. He learned that being human can be harder and more challenging and random than anything that his Harvard degree had ever prepared him for. This discovery opened his heart, creating a wiser, more patient, and open-minded person. Duhat gave up the story he had told himself, that hardworking, good people will inevitably be happy. Instead, Duhat started appreciating the blessings and good fortune to have the support of family, of good work, and the ability to pursue remedies for his illness. He discovered grace, and he shares this with everyone by writing this book and publishing it. We have all suffered, and some of us are suffering right now. And the rest of us will suffer again if we aren't now. It's inevitable. And so what I hope for us is that our suffering will open our hearts to each other, deepen our compassion and kindness, and help us become more generous, loving people. And that when we do suffer, we seek the comfort and support of God or the divine or the ocean or the trees or most completely each other. We remember always the blessings of our lives, no matter what we are experiencing. May we experience grace. Let us rise and sing 205, Amazing Grace.
Save a wretch like me.
Let us go into the world remembering the secret suffering all around us and to be kind, to just be kind, always. We extinguish the flame, but not the vision and the compassion of our faith. May they stay with you until we meet again.
Carry your faith.